Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. And with me today, I have Jeff Butson. How are you, Jeff?
I am fantastic.
Excellent. And I'm glad you're able to join in today. Brian Chaffin, how are you?
Kind of tired, man.
I feel your pain.
Otherwise, splendid. Good to be here. Happy to be here.
And I'm really happy that you're here. And I feel like I'm especially lucky because since we're at WWDC, we get to spend time together every day.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Hey, I also feel lucky because we have some great sponsors for our WWDC coverage this week, including GigSky, Max Sales, Riedel, SaneBox, and iMazing. We'll be talking about SaneBox shortly. And we might as well just hop into some topics, like one where, Brian, I'm hoping you can help me understand a little bit better what Apple's doing. And this is the Apple Pay Cash thing. This is one of the things that Apple announced during the keynote on Monday. And it sounds very compelling, but I don't know if I fully wrap my head around that. So help me with that.
Oh, you know the I don't actually do any research for these shows, right?
Right. But if I go with your knowledge and it turns out to be wrong, then it's just not my fault.
Nobody can blame him.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's a fair point. So stepping up to the slaughterhouse ramp, I will say that Apple Cash Pay allows people to send each other money through Apple Pay through iMessage. So you and I could pay you that $20 I've owed you for the last 10 years.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, sure, right? It would be. Or I could, if you were babysitting, I could pay you for babysitting services.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're buying lunch and, it's going on your card, but I don't have cash to give you for my half, I could send you, that money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what will happen is that Apple Pay Cash becomes a sort of virtual debit card. And so you would have a balance. So I sent you that $20. That $20 is going to be sitting in Apple Pay Cash. Now you could then use that money to pay for something or send it to someone else that you owe $20 to, or have it withdrawn to your bank account.
Okay. And so since this is essentially sending money back and forth through a special sort of account that Apple's creating for you, a virtual debit card. I'm assuming in the beginning, since you won't have any money there to share, that it links back to your other accounts
so yeah,
you can get money in?
Your funding sources are your credit cards or your debit cards. And what will happen is if you're using a debit card to send someone money, there's no transaction fee. If you're using a credit card, so like if I'm going to pay you that $20 by putting on a credit card, I'm going to be hit with 3% fee.
Okay, so not a surprise.
What if it's a debit card?
Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
If it's a debit card? Yeah, what if it's a debit card used as a credit card?
It's a debit card.
Okay.
Yeah, the fact that it's branded as a charge card too, so that you can use it as a charge card, would be irrelevant to Apple in this particular case.
Okay.
So this is positioning Apple against a company called Venmo, which has been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's also positioning Apple against all of the Chinese companies, all of the very, very, very popular, chat platforms, especially say WeChat.
Mm-hmm.
In China, where people have been sending money to each other left and right, through their Apple Pay Cash competitors, progenitors. This is why Apple had all those companies pull those services recently.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right, and it's also why the Chinese regulators are going to end up squashing Apple for this and forcing them to allow that to actually happen again, because it's clearly a bit of an unfair competitive advantage for Apple to not let anybody else do it.
Sure.
Just, just to insert one more service that it's positioning Apple against is Facebook. Facebook Messenger.
True. And Square Cash and PayPal is doing something in sort of similar.
But PayPal me sucks.
How do you really feel, Jeff?
To a certain extent, Chase has been letting you. I think Citibank does as well, but I believe that Chase has been letting people
send their money. Chase and Wells Fargo and a few others have that Quick Cash or Quick Pay or whatever it is.
But those are all going through dedicated apps. And what Apple is doing is letting people do it through iMessage, which is what the Chinese companies, the Chinese platforms have been doing, and which has allowed those Chinese platforms to rise to all but essential status within the Chinese culture. So, you know, Apple definitely has a pretty good advantage here. But at the same time, it is only going to be, for the time being, at least as we see what Apple does, it's going to be only iOS customers, right? Android users need not apply. That's a limiting factor for Apple. That's a little bit of a limiting factor for Apple.
Yeah, but this is how they typically start with all of their services. It's their own platform first, and then if they're going to support other platforms later on, that rolls out.
You know, iMessage has been around long enough. I don't think Apple is going to bring iMessage to Android. I think there's a lot of security issues there, as well as privacy issues. I believe that iMessage is going to remain an iOS-only platform for the foreseeable future, which means that as we know it, Apple Pay Cash would also remain iOS only.
All right. Yeah. And for a brief moment, I was thinking, oh, that's really bad. But then I realized that even though the iPhone is not the largest smartphone platform in the world, Apple Pay is doing fine.
Yeah, Apple Pay is doing fine. And to be fair, not trying to be partisan here, the iPhone ecosystem, the iOS ecosystem, is probably the most valuable mobile platform in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got that going on. But anyway, I think this is super interesting. It doesn't quite put Apple in the banking business, but it's sure.
That's pretty close.
It sure dips at least in the lobby. Toes into the banking business. And also keep in mind, like, I know one of the things we talked about this when we talked about in the meeting is that Apple could theoretically use, you know, algorithmically speaking, money that's sitting in Apple Pay Cash to loan it out and earn interest. Well, Apple earns very little interest on its own cash hoard. So the idea that this would be a significant monetary stream, even if Apple did choose to try to leverage its cash that way, I find pretty. I don't think the numbers support that.
Yeah, my assumption, just based on what little we know right now, is that Apple Pay Cash is more about making Apple's own products more indispensable for users, as opposed to generating a new revenue stream through that.
100% agreed. And listen, I tell you, if I'm going to send you that $20 that I've owed you for the last 10 years, I'd much rather do it through Apple Pay, where the transaction is not going to be tracked from a marketing data collection standpoint, and where I know that it's going to be one of the most secure transactions on the planet in terms of security.
Yeah, and
so giddy up, gimme.
Right, and then we have the added bonus of it'll be easy to use. I've done payments to people, you know, just like send someone some money through PayPal in the past, and PayPal's interface is just weird. And it's kind of confusing, and you finally get it done, but you're not confident it really worked until the person on the other end tells you that it did. I'm assuming this is going to be a much friendlier experience
Yeah, you would think so, right? Apple is pretty good at that sort of thing. So long story short, I think this is going to be a big deal for Apple. It's an ecosystem play. It's not a direct profit play, although, you know, 3%, getting 3%. Of course, that money would be at least split with the credit card companies. But that could end up being a bit of a revenue stream from Apple. And I call this a good thing. And by the way, that 3% is standard. That's what all the other people are doing too. It's for if you're going through a debit card, and 3% if you're going through a credit card. So Apple's not breaking any new ground.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to getting to try this out and get that $20.
Yeah, that's a bonus to Jeff.
Don't you wish I actually owed you $20 after saying it so many times?
Yeah, I know. That's right. I'll just pretend. It'll be fine.
I owe John a steak dinner, so I could just send him cash.
Yeah, that's true. You could totally do that. Yeah. Hey.
Now you do owe him $20 because you said it in front of me, and I'll back him.
Oh, sweet. I need to have these conversations with a lot more people.
You forget where your paychecks come from, Jeff Butts.
Oh. Well, but it looks like lost my witness.
Yeah, you may want to reconsider your stand.
Sorry, Jeff.
No, that's all right. I get it. But hey, on a happy note, we have SaneBox as our show sponsor today. And SaneBox, if you aren't familiar with them, well, you ought to be, because SaneBox makes your email actually manageable. And the way it works is that SaneBox has the smarts built in to be able to triage your email for you. And so it's doing all of this pre-filtering and pre-sorting of all your messages. It doesn't matter what email client you're using. It just works. And then the email that you really need to see is right there in front of you, and it learns. So the email that you truly, really need to see, not just what someone else thinks you need to see, that's what's going to be in front of you first. And you can use this to organize out emails so that you have, it's triaging. So you can have the messages you need to look at right now, the messages that are important to look at later, the newsletters and other things that you read, they can be in a separate group. So you get to those when you have your breaks. And then if you need to follow up on messages, or you need to be reminded about a message later on, then it handles that too. And this is a cool thing that Dave Hamilton was telling me about that he does. He uses the SaneBox email service to get email sent back to him at the time he needs to actually interact with it. So like if he has an email that he needs to follow up with tomorrow at 9 in the morning, he can send an email with the day and the time to SaneBox, just right in the email address.
You forward it.
Yeah, you just forward it, and then SaneBox makes the message pop back up in front of you at that time. So like the example Dave gave me was you need to be reminded of an email to interact with at 9 a.m. on Friday. So you would send the email to fry-9am@sanebox.com, and it's going to pop back up right when you needed it. That's like crazy cool. So you can try this out for 2 weeks for free to make sure that it works for you the way you need it to, and odds are it will. It's everyone I know that tries out SaneBox decides it's a service that they have to have to be able to manage their email. So you get the 2 weeks free, but because you're listening to Daily Observations, you get a special bonus to go along with this. So if you go to SaneBox.com, that's SaneBox.com/TDO, SaneBox.com/TDO, you get an extra $15 credit on top of the 2 week free trial. So not only do you get to try it out, but you get some extra, discount to go along with that because you get that $15 credit. So that's really awesome. Go check them out, sanebox.com/TDO, and you're going to be so much happier when you have Sanebox keeping your email under control for you. So thank you, Sanebox, for being our sponsor.
Hey, Jeff.
Yes.
Dr. Mac Bob Levitis's Working Smarter for Mac Users book.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole section dedicated to Sanebox. That's where I first learned about it. It does a great job of explaining how to use it and how you can use it to save time. But it really pitches. He does a great job of explaining all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to stop procrastinating. He can try it. So anyway, it's his new book, Working Smarter for Mac Users. Can you put the link in the show notes?
Of course I can.
Awesome.
Yep. All right. Well, that's a great tip. Thanks, Brian. All right. So the other thing that I want to talk about today before we wrap up, Apple released the first episode of Planet of the Apps. So this is one of the original TV shows that they've been working on. And Planet of the Apps is the show where you have a bunch of developers that are pitching their app idea to some celebrities. And then if they're selected, they go on through this whole process. And then ultimately you'll end up with one developer who is the final winner in the whole show. And then their app goes on the App Store. So, it's being equated to Shark Tank for apps. And that seems like a reasonable, description of the show. I've had a chance to watch the first episode. Jeff, you have watched it as well. I'm curious, what do you think of the show?
Well, first of all, their apps are already on the App Store.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, even the dating app that didn't make it, they're mm-hmm. there. But talking about the show, you know, I was a big fan of Shark Tank, and I'm a finicky TV watcher. I don't like a lot of shows. I don't have the patience for it most of the time. Mm-hmm. I sat through all 49 minutes and however many seconds of Planet of the Apps without any problem, and I'm looking forward to next week's episode.
Awesome. All right.
This sounds like this is going to be huge exposure, win or lose. Unlike Shark Tank, where oftentimes you're dealing with like local businesses that may or may not get a boost from being on the show. If they're on the App Store or coming to the App Store, because we don't know how future seasons will go, that'd be huge exposure for these people. That's great.
Yeah. I really like that part of it. So I watched it also. My takeaway when I was finished with the episode was that was okay. It didn't excite me the way it did you, Jeff. And it felt to me like a lot of what was happening was forced. And watching the celebrities, it was almost like I was watching people that really didn't want to be there. And Gary Vee, the way he was tossing out his questions, his little jabs and barbs, it didn't feel like the regular Gary Vee, you know, high energy smartass thing that he can do. It felt to me almost like it was really forced, like he was having to work to come up with his zings that he was tossing out. And maybe I was being too critical. I don't know. But that was just the way it felt to me. It seemed like a fine show, and it seemed like if you're into that kind of show, you'll probably like this. Yeah. And if not, this probably isn't the show that's going to get you into the, you know, the business pitch show.
Right.
To be fair, not fair isn't the right word, but this is important to remember. With the way that TV has branched out into streaming services like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and increasingly Apple Pay, or starting even with the show with Apple Pay, being niche is just fine. It's not like the old days when we had three networks and ask your parents what that was about, kids. It's not like the old days where you only had three networks where every show had to essentially be as appealing as possible to the most number of people possible. So people who don't like pitch shows or people who aren't interested in apps, it's okay if they don't like this.
Sure. I agree completely. The other thing
is that, you know, this isn't a show that you have to watch at a specific time. You can go and download it whenever you want.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and, yeah, as with everything on Netflix or Amazon.
Well, so. Yeah, nowadays, yeah. And Jeff, you know, you said to me earlier in our meeting that you would have rather seen Carpool Karaoke be the first one to hit the airwaves, if you would. Mm-hmm. And see, my point here is that you can't have a TV show that appeals to everyone.
No,
if they had put Carpool Karaoke up first, I probably would have watched it only for the purposes of reviewing it, but I wouldn't have enjoyed it because that's not my cup of tea.
Yep, I totally get it. And the reason I was thinking Carpool Karaoke should have premiered first is because I'm assuming it's a higher energy show. And I think that would have made for a better first impression than Planet of the Apps. But
it depends on how good the karaoke is.
Yeah, it totally does. We haven't seen Carpool Karaoke yet. And my guess is that every episode has been re-edited because when they were doing their early screenings to get feedback, it didn't sound like it was going well.
Right.
But they've been doing a lot of reworking on the show and it sounds like it's doing better now. So it's like anything else. Do you want it right now or do you want it when it's right? And so this show had to air first and Carpool Karaoke will come later. And the big question that I have for the show producers of Planet of the Apps is, did you make a show that really does go to head to head with Shark Tank? And if so, then great. And if not, then step up the game because that's what everyone's comparing it to.
Oh, and it's a bit late to step up the game. Show's done.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So hopefully they really did make a show that can go head to head, toe to toe, whatever with Shark Tank. And if so, it'll probably do just fine.
Here's a side question for you. It's interesting that Apple is not doing a release them all at the same time like Netflix.
You know, Apple's that surprised me.
One episode at a week. They're doing the same thing with Carpool Karaoke when it debuts this fall. That kind of surprises me.
There's a strategy there, I think.
I would guess.
If you go to Planet of the Apps website, you can watch the first episode free for a limited time. After that time, you have to be an Apple Music subscriber.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, processing it in my head, it makes sense to me that this series gets released in a more traditional way. Because otherwise, you could watch the first episode, watch the last episode, and just skip everything in between.
No, you couldn't, though, because the show doesn't work that way. Well, and I meant to comment on this earlier. You said that we have to wait until the final episode to see if they get on the app store and if they get their funding.
Yeah, but you're right.
They're all self-contained. We found out last night. Pear didn't make it.
Whoa. Spoiler alert.
Oh, geez. Sorry.
Yeah, don't do spoilers. That's all right.
My bad. We found out last night, someone might have made it, someone didn't. We found out at the end of the episode. We don't have to wait for a future episode.
Yeah, that's true. So, all right. Well, my guess is that we're going to be talking about Apple's original TV content more because the shows are starting to come out.
Oh, yeah.
And we're out of time, so we'll just have to do that another day. Yep. Brian, thank you for being here today.
Good. Andrew Orr is working on a good piece. Sorry, I was dry. Thank you for having us, Jeff.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Andrew's working on. Jeff, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Sanebox for being today's sponsor. Head over to their website, sanebox.com/TDO. Get your 2 weeks free, plus your $15 credit towards your subscription. And then also thank you to Gig Sky, Max Sales, Riedel, and iMazing for also being our WWDC sponsors all week long. Listeners, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for joining me. We'll see you again tomorrow.